It's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. For more than 40 years, Paul Schaefer has been providing the soundtrack for late-night television. He just released a new album called Paul Schaefer and the World's Most Dangerous Band, and he's joining us tonight. Good evening, Paul.
Well, am I ever happy to be with you. Good evening to you, sir.
Great to talk to you. And how's life after late night, for God's sake?
Well, you know what? It was a little slower for a while, and then I got a call from an old friend, Seymour Stein, legendary music exec, and he said, how would you like to make a record? And things picked up, you know.
Sure.
Now I'm busier than ever. I'm promoting the record. It got done. I'm very proud of it. I got the late show band from all those years in the trenches with Dave.
I love that.
I have reunited the band, and we made the record together, had a great time. Taking it on the road now. Coming to see you soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Bringing the great Valerie Simpson with me, a soul legend who wrote with her late husband, Ain't No Mountain High Enough, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing. I don't need no doctor. I could go on and on and on. You're all I need to get by. You know, giving us a lesson in soul music every single night of this tour. So I can't wait to come to this theater, which I've been looking at on YouTube.
The Arcata.
Yes, and I see it's a sort of a, I've been seeing a lot of a show that features the bands from the 60s in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That I grew up listening to on WLS.
Of course.
I used to be able to hear WLS AM radio up in Canada after dark.
Sure.
And I heard all these bands like the Shadows of Night, the Crying Shames, and the group that sang Things I'd Like to Say. I can't remember what. Oh, yes, the New Colony 6.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And I saw that they did this big show with all of them at this theater, the Arcata.
Yeah, Arcata Theater. Yeah.
So I can see it's almost hallowed ground when it comes to the Chicago sound.
It's a perfect match. Absolutely a perfect match. Well, you know, and I was going to tell you, I got to tell you, when I was 10 years old, I think it was maybe 1977, 78, when my parents finally let me watch Saturday Night Live. And I remember seeing you on stage and playing with Bill Murray and all that other good stuff. And
yeah.
I thought to myself, that cat is cool, man.
How about that? I mean, you were already speaking my language. My antiquated, anachronistic language. When you were just a little kid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You didn't see much of me on Saturday Night Live either.
It was just a little bit here and there.
Of me in the background and Bill Murray's thing and stuff. But, so that's so sweet of you to say, even when you were a kid, you had good taste in, television musicians.
That's right. Well, you know, I was looking at this because I know music has always been such a big part of your life and taking lessons when you were a kid and stuff. But you got your big break. And I look at this. Your first big deal was a Canadian production of Godspell back in 72 with the likes of Gilda Radner, Martin Short, Eugene Levy, Andrea Martin, Dave Thomas, right out of college. I mean, that must have been surreal.
Well, it wasn't. I mean, it was like I had graduated college a year before and said to my parents, let me take, a year to try show business and music and see if it works out. Otherwise, I'll go to grad school. So I didn't know really, but, the year was coming to an end, and just on a fluke, I got hired to be the conductor of this Godspell show. And it was an open call, they just hired all the most talented people in town. And the funniest people. We were all about 22 years old.
Wow.
I, Martin Short, Eugene, the three of us are still best friends.
That's awesome.
Andrea as well, maybe the funniest of all of them. We lost poor Gilda, of course, long ago.
Yeah.
But, we're all still best friends and still make each other laugh on a consistent basis. And I don't know how I got so lucky. Just one of those things.
Yeah. And then you did this other show, and then after that, you were on Saturday Night Live when it actually premiered. How did that all come about? Like, how did that connection happen for you, Paul?
After that Godspell show in Toronto, I became a Mr. Theater. I was doing shows, conducting
right.
shows.
Yeah.
And a guy came in to play saxophone in one of the shows. It was Howard Shore. He's now a big, successful a film writer, mm-hmm. music writer, you know, scoring. But at that time, he was playing shows, too. And then he turned out he was Lorne Michaels' friend who came down with him to put together the band for Saturday Night Live. Howard became a musical director. He already knew I was in town. I was still working for the Stephen Schwartz, the gospel composer. He had brought me into town to play Broadway already, you know, by that time in New York. And Howard came into Saturday Night Live, called me up, you're already here, come down and play. And P.S., you know Gilda already, and, you know, yeah. Aykroyd and Belushi, and, you know, I knew the whole crowd. So it's very natural for me to start writing for them and developing material for them. And then I became what they called a feature player in the fifth season and got on camera a little bit doing sketches.
You did. And, I mean, obviously, you know, that show was so relevant back then and is even more relevant today, you know, with the political culture happening in our country. It was groundbreaking. It broke all the rules. What were those early days like? I mean, you know, I know it's like constant work. I mean, you're there, you know, 6-7 days a week getting the show done.
Well, nobody had a girlfriend or anything to, you know, keep them from going and working all night there. None of us had anything to do, and it was the most exciting thing happening. Of course, it was a lot of fun to actually be able to get things on live television. You know, I worked on numbers, musical numbers that would get performed on the air. Oh, tremendous, tremendously exciting. Working so hard, though, that you don't realize that the show was getting well-known. It was getting successful, you know. All of a sudden, everybody became a star.
Right.
It was quite something, you know, for the first time. Didn't know how it was going to work. I couldn't even figure out how we were supposed to go on live.
Yeah.
What a daunting thought, you know.
It is, but that's
how you know you're doing it.
Yeah, you know, as I say, television, that's what it was in the 40s and 50s. I mean, so much of it was live, and that was really the norm. And then really for almost two decades, you know, everything was pre-taped and edited down. But now you had this fast-moving show. I mean, you know, unlike anything that's ever been on television before. And, yeah, going live that late at night, it sounds daunting.
Fun to do.
Yeah.
I must say, though, that live, though it was scripted. And it is scripted. And, you know, they stick to that script because they shoot it beautifully. All their shots are planned. They don't want to miss anything. Letterman wasn't really live. It was taped earlier that day, around dinner time.
Yeah.
But that was so loose and spontaneous that it was almost like it was live.
Yeah.
Really, even more like flying by the seat of your pants, because there's no, you know, you're not reading a script. You are just improvising a lot of the time. It was really very, very exciting to do Letterman too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think I probably first saw you doing the Lounge Singer skit with your buddy Bill Murray, and you reprised that role on the 40th anniversary. I know you know the origins of this Nick the Lounge Singer, because you've known Bill for so long.
You know, I think he kind of developed it. Origin, heard about Bill from his older brother Brian, who had come to Toronto right after the Godspell of 73,
okay,
to put together a Second City stage show like they were doing in Chicago.
Sure.
Brian and I hit it off. We became friends. He said, you got to meet my brother Bill. He's doing the show in Chicago. He does a thing where he does, with another guy, the comedy team of Alan and Rossi, who I used to see on the Sullivan Show all the time.
Mm-hmm.
One crazy monkey kind of a comic guy with wild hair, and the other guy, a very suave lounge singer kind of guy who would sing a song first, and then the other guy would come out crazy, you know, hey, wait a second, what are you doing here? I just finished my song. And when I got to New York, I met Billy, and we, you know, we started doing things together right away. I was not on SNL. I had taken a year off to do a thing in a sitcom in Hollywood for a minute. That's a whole other story.
Greg Evigan and Mickey Rooney.
Oh, my goodness. No, why must you remember what I tried so hard? Anyway,
yeah.
I came back. You know, when I came back from that show, Billy was on SNL.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. And the first thing I saw him do while I was away was shower microphone. Remember those things?
Yep.
Soap, shower soap made in the shape of a microphone. So, and there was Billy as a character who's like doing a show in the shower with the shower mic. But then he goes a little too far. He brings his wife into the shower, you know, and then the guy with whom she's having an affair, come on, get in here, you know. And yeah. I think that may have been the origin of it. And then he developed into it, you know, hey, there's, how about he's a real lounge singer?
Yeah.
And he has Paul on piano, and, you know, he's at a ski lounge and stuff. And sure. The way Billy's mind works is, I don't know, it's sheer genius.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm noticing a lot of Chicago connections, you know, that you're mentioning through Second City and everything. And the same with the Blues Brothers, you know, very synonymous. And you did a lot of work with Dan and John. And you were supposed to be in the Blues Brothers movie, weren't you?
Well, of course. I had put the band together, musician by musician, with John.
Yeah.
But I had a little conflict of schedule and was working with Billy Radner, making a record with her. And didn't get a record done in time, and I had to pull out on John. And, oh, my God, it was such a horrible situation for me. You know, and John and I had a big feud and falling out, and we weren't speaking. And then we had a big reconciliation, though, and a happy ending, and we kissed and made up. And I rejoined the Blues Brothers for the big tour.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Where I wish we rehearsed in Chicago at the Navy Yards.
Yeah, wow.
And played Pine Knob. That was our first job, I think.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right outside of Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, a lot of connections,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
mainly that list, that Chicago radio.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that was big for me as a kid.
Big music.
AM radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then 82.
Big radio town.
Absolutely, still
and
is.
And I guess, you know, a lot of people driving. Drive time must have been huge.
Yeah, still is. Honestly, it still is. Uh-huh. Even with all the choices today, still is in Chicago. 82 came. You were offered the role to lead the band on Late Night with David Letterman. Did you know Dave before that time, or was that kind of a first meeting?
I didn't, and I, you know, but I was familiar with him. And not only that, but he had had a show in the morning.
The daytime show, right.
First, yeah, live in the morning on NBC. And I became familiar with that show, which was the funniest thing I'd ever seen, especially after they got canceled and they had to stay on the air doing shows for another month.
Right.
Well, they didn't care. Yeah. At that point, they didn't care. And
right.
It got so off the wall that I said, who is this guy? And then I got that call. You know, that show didn't pan out, a little too hip for the morning, but it contained, they were had faith in Dave, and they finally gave him a late night show. Even later than Johnny Carson, you know, boy, that's late. I said, that's for me. And sure enough, you know, I went in and met Dave cold, and we hit it off. And he hired me, and that, you know, that was the first time I met him.
You know, and think about these two groundbreaking shows, because you said, you know, it was groundbreaking for that morning show to be on. It was groundbreaking, all those things that Dave did, and then Saturday Night Live, and you were part of both of these really historic, groundbreaking shows. And it's a perfect fit, Paul.
I'm a real zealot kind of guy, aren't I? I turned up. I don't know how that happened. And before that, I was in Toronto for that groundbreaking Godspell, which was, by nature, a show which took advantage of the performers' talents anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was doing impressions, older impressions at that time, Groucho, you know, things like that, Laurel and Hardy. They would put them in the show. You know, these kids were so talented, and they could do Marty Short. I mean, some of the stuff, Sinatra. No, but who was doing, what 22-year-old kid was doing Sinatra back in those days? Well, he was in the show.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, certainly a blessed life comedically. I love to laugh more almost more than playing the piano, but not quite, you know, so. I still get to do my two favorite things. Fantastic.
Absolutely. 30 years with Dave, Late Night and Late Show.
Yeah.
Did the friendship grow quickly? You had such a great camaraderie to me, watching you as a viewer on air.
The friendship grew quickly, and then the on-air relationship kind of followed, you know, and just developed as the show developed. And got looser. Dave felt more and more comfortable, so comfortable that he would, you know, even give it up to me and say, if you have anything, jump right in.
Yeah, I love that.
What other boss would say that?
Yeah, very rare.
You know, and so I started to jump in, and ultimately it became a, you know, then there was a point where you said, you know, you jump in with a kind of a, with a funny quip, which is great. He said, but what I would love is if we just had a conversation and you didn't, you know, none of us knew what we were going to say. Neither of us had anything planned. And so eventually we started doing that. And that, of course, is the true fun. That was like improvising in Second City, but being on television doing it and doing it with the quickest, fastest mind still, I think, in show business.
Absolutely.
And so, very, you know, and, talk about a blessing.
And very comfortable. You guys had a very comfortable relationship on the air.
He made me comfortable, and I was able to improvise with him. And I noticed that elsewhere, I was on another show, he wasn't quite so comfortable. So he really did, you know. He set me up, I must say. I was straight man for him, but he enabled me to get my own laughs, too.
Absolutely.
What could be better?
And I was watching some. I had Don Rickles on last year, and we talked a little about his relationship with Johnny and Ed and you and Dave. And he just said it was just some of the best, most fun that he's ever had on the air. And as soon as Johnny left, you know, it was all Dave and Dave and you, and he would engage you also in conversation, and always so much fun.
Well, I think he paid me one of the highest compliments the first time he was ever on Letterman's show. He turned to me and he said, Paul, have yourself committed.
He did. I just watched it yesterday.
I tell you. Yes, well, what a, you know, to have Rickles say that about you, what a cop.
Absolutely.
I was touched. I was touched and moved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you've had to have, and I know you've been asked this before, so forgive me, but I'm sure you've had favorites. You've played with everybody. I mean, you've played with everybody through the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, through the late night shows, through SNL. You have played with the biggest and the best. And I know there's got to be some of the, like, top three in your mind that you revered when they walked on stage and you got to play with them. I think one of them may have been James Brown.
Well, I've said it before, and of course I'll say it again right now. Yes, there was nothing like playing with him the first time in 1982. James Brown was one of the early guys who did the show, actually called us and said, I'd like to come on.
Wow.
He heard me and the band playing his stuff, you know, going into commercial. And he came on, and he also said, what songs would the band like to play with me? He let us pick our favorites. And boy, did we picked a few obscure ones, like Sex Machine. You still see it on YouTube because it was so hot that I never thought I could play like that. But when you start hearing that voice and him dancing a little bit, I mean, you play like you never thought you could. So that's right up there. And otherwise, I don't know. I kind of feel loyal to the early people that did it. Carole King did it early.
Wow.
And Sly from the Family Stone. You know, that triumvirate right there, I don't think I ever topped that as far as getting to play with people that I idolized as a kid.
Legendary. Absolutely legendary. All right, more with Paul Schaefer coming up next on 720 WGN.
Hey, Bill. Bill. Hey, Bill Murray. Hey, wait up. Wait up. Let me catch up to you.
Hey, Pauly. Nice running into you out on the street.
Last person I thought I'd ever run into. It's great to see you.
Well, great to see you.
How you doing?
Right now, I'm just loving the way that I'm walking, baby.
When life is feeling sweet, it has a certain beat. Everything's groovy when you're walking down Happy Street. Sometimes it might seem dark. Same path, same block, same park. When you light your light, you're walking down Happy Street. When things ain't cool, here's my real simple rule. Why not just change your point of view? And when you know, hey, that's the way I should roll, all you gotta do is just take a step outside. So great to be alive, smiling at those you meet when you're walking down Happy Street.
Dave Player on 720 WGN, and we're talking to music icon Paul Schaefer about his new album and life after late night television. What do you see when you look back at those 30 years of late night? Like, what do you, you know, is it something that you just revere now and feel, wow, that was the most incredible experience in the world. It was the most important thing in life. Or like, how do you look back at those years?
Well, Dave Letterman said something interesting the other day in an interview that I read, in which he said, I thought that show was the most important thing in the world at the time. Looking back, I see it wasn't so important at all. Well, I think he's right. And yes, it sure did feel important at the time. And it was relentless, too, in a way that I'm not complaining about at all. It was a privilege. But to get to play every single day and, you know, to do that show every single day, who else gets to do that?
Yeah.
It was a phenomenal experience, and it was a big change when it was over, when it ended. Oh, my goodness, I have nothing to do now, going from 100 miles an hour to zero. But now that I've adjusted to that, and I'm, you know, actually busier than ever, I can look back and say, wow, you know, it was quite an accomplishment.
Absolutely.
I've lasted the whole time.
Absolutely.
And still alive. After 33 years.
Yeah.
With 33 years every night on TV. What a blessing.
And you still see Dave once in a while, don't you? You have lunch with him once
in
a while.
See him all
dinners.
The time,
yeah,
yes.
That's great.
Yes, we
that's
have dinner great. And stuff. And that, and we say, did we really have a show? It does seem like a dream
wow.
in some ways.
Wow. What are your thoughts on the beard?
The beard has its own agent now. aside from that, I don't know. You know, Dave is so happy he doesn't have to shave.
Yeah, that's what it seems
that
like.
He, you know, and the more people hate that beard on him, I think the more gleeful he becomes.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And now you've got this new album out, so you got the world's most dangerous band back together. You know, what propelled you to hit the studio again? Like, you know, what thoughts were in your mind? Like, you know, I just got to go do this.
I got a call from a man who has become an old friend. He was a legend to me first, before I met him, Seymour Stein, mm-hmm. the legendary record exec who started Sire Records, you know, in the late 70s and had Madonna on the label, those Talking Heads and, you know, so many more. The New Wave acts and the Ramones, et cetera. We could go on and on. And I got to know him over the course of the time I did the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction dinners all these 30 years. And he called after Letterman ended and said, how would you like to get back into the music business? He knew that I, you know, was a side man, I was a studio man and stuff during SNL and before Letterman and stuff. So I jumped at the chance and I had an opportunity to make a record. Not that I knew exactly what I was going to do. It took me a while to figure out what kind of a record it should be. Certainly to have fun, kind of thing that's fun to listen to. I certainly wanted to do that, and I think I succeeded in doing that. I got the old band back together from the trenches of the David Letterman show, and we have a third, you know, almost a third language together. Well, I don't know what the second one is, but we speak a musical language that. It's almost extrasensory. We can tell what we're going to do. We had a lot of fun making it, a lot of wonderful guest artists, everybody from Shaggy to Dion, the original Wanderer, and Jenny Lewis in between, and all kinds of wonderful people came and helped us out on vocals, and we sing a little bit too. And taking the show on the road this spring.
Yeah, and it's a great balance of rock and soul. And I have to assume, you know, it probably for you, it was picking the music first and doing the arrangements and so forth. But, you know, picking the vocalist like that you just mentioned, you know, how did you even go about that process of picking the vocalist for each of these?
In most cases, it was the song first.
Yeah.
And then, you know, oh, my goodness, this would be great. Like when the first song is Cast Your Fate to the Wind. We did the old... Yeah. Venerable Vince Guaraldi classic. And then it seemed on its own to go in a kind of a Caribbean direction this time. It was always a little bit Latin, but now we took it straight down to the islands, and it turned out that somebody I knew somebody who knew Shaggy, whom I love, and he was happy to put his Jamaican magic dance hall thing on this album. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things. It just worked out.
Yeah, so cool.
The same was true with, you know, a desire to do an old Sam Cooke song, an obscure one that I didn't even know, but Seymour knew and loved and turned me on to. To Win Your Love From Me, And Dion, you know, unbelievable vocal, the perfect guy to do it. In the case of Jenny Lewis, well, it was my producer, Richard Goddard, who said, "Why do you think you could get Jenny Lewis to do something on this record?" And I had just worked with her on a Billy Murray's Christmas special.
Oh, right. Netflix, yeah.
She said yes. She was a waitress, did a duet with him, and sang that beautiful Pogue song about Christmas time, too.
That's
anyway, we hit it off, and she said she would do something, and then we figured out after that which what song to get her to do. Turned out to be one that Richie had written back in the day with his two partners, Richie Goddard, my producer. For the McCoys, they wrote a song called Sorrow. Bowie ended up covering it and stuff, and a lot of other acts, and that's what she sings and does a kind of a magical job of it.
Well, and then what got my attention, too, because the music videos out there is Billy Murray, as you said. Big Cubs fan, by the way. I don't know if you knew that. And
I heard something about that, yeah.
Yeah. But he
does.
Well,
I didn't know what. First of all, I wasn't sure he would do it. He loves to sing, but he's usually singing for comedic effect, you know.
Yeah.
But it was so nice of him to say he would do it. And then we kind of we had thrown a song together, really. We just wanted a happy vibe, and it was going to be an instrumental, and then Richie's wife came up with a lyric for it, and then Jenny Lewis said, "Well, Billy should sing this," and she heard it. And that's how it happened.
Oh, very cool.
And maybe she had a little something to
maybe
talk
a little
to
something, talk, yeah.
to do it, talk him into doing it. But
that's great.
You know, we flew down to South Carolina, where he lives, boarded him all afternoon there. He worked hard on this. He took it seriously, and he was under the microscope a little bit with this vocal, you know. But I think he sounds terrific, like a very relaxed Dean Martin kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool.
And, it came out very nicely, and then they animated it. And people loved the video.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
It's kind of simple, and I don't know, you know. Somebody said it's like a warped Sesame Street. Well, I like the warped part. It certainly is warped.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's put it that way.
No, it's very cool. And before I let you go, I know the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony is coming up, 32nd ceremony in a few weeks, and I'm sure you're preparing for that as well.
It's the 32nd one, eh?
Yeah.
I thought it was even more than that.
Yeah, 32nd.
This one, they have finally gotten around to honoring some people who were long overdue, and almost all the bands are self-contained, like Journey and Yes and stuff. And the only Joan Baez, which was very solid on what she's going to do, and Tupac isn't around to figure out what to do.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, this is one year where I get to just sit out and enjoy the show.
Awesome.
But can't wait.
Very cool. Well, Paul's new album is, again, called Paul Schaefer and the World's Most Dangerous Band. It's available now. Paul and the band will be touring and will be appearing right here in Chicago at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles on June 30th. And for tickets, you can visit ArcataLive.com. Paul, what a pleasure it has been spending some time with you.
Very happy to be with you, and I can't wait to hit that Arcata Theater. I'll be pretending I'm the guy from, you know, the Ides of March.
I like it.
I may pull out a little vehicle for the occasion.
Looking forward to it, my friend. Thanks again.
See you later. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, Paul. All right. Much more ahead on 720 WGN.